The person who presents a pitch deck with a nice picture of themselves but gives no background on their credibility, doesn't give any proof of concept of what they've already done. Are you saying that there's a low chance of them actually receiving funding?
I just say good luck. I was helping someone today and she's like, I am raising capital, but I haven't done a lot of deals. People want, are they credible? How can I trust this person? She's like, how do I get in this if I haven't been in it before? And I said,
welcome to Nursing Real Wealth. This week, we're thrilled to have Jill Jensen on the show. Jill is a single mom from Utah and the chief investment officer at Sonos Capital, where she raises money for large mobile home parks. Her sales prowess began in 2010, selling pest control door-to-door and earning six figures in a single summer. This success led her to launch her own pest control company, generating millions annually. In 2022, Jill ventured into real estate, acquiring mobile home parks and large multifamily properties. She's seeking accredited investors for hands-off opportunities and is expanding her team at Sonos Capital. Jill, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Justin.
You bet. Yeah. Glad to have you on.
Excited to be here.
What did you learn this last week? You were hanging out with some people down in Arizona.
I was.
What'd you learn?
My way into the Sub2 fund, Pace Morby's group. He has his own large multifamily fund, and I did invest into that fund and had the opportunity to go pick the brain of someone else that has the same position I do at my job. And then I snuck into Pace's studio. I was like, I think you're doing some filming this week. Can I come watch? And he's like, sure, pick five people.
So, there you go.
Hang out with Pace and his group.
That's awesome. Well, let's dive in. I want to get into mobile home parks. I don't know why, but this one has definitely evaded me. You drive by them and you just, I don't know. I never really thought of them as an investment, but you might change my mind here. So what specific characteristics about mobile home parks make them attractive investment opportunities for you? And can you share maybe a successful investment story or example from your experience that really highlights their potential?
Yes, that is a really good question. So we're going to dive right into it. There are different ways to take down a mobile home park. And our strategy I work at Sonos Capital, is we're kind of like fix and flip. We take a sad park and we make it pretty. So current deal that I'm closing on next week, it's 102 units and it's 60% occupied and 40% unoccupied. And what we're going to do is we're going to bring in 40 homes and we sell all of the houses at cost. We're also able to get them on a discount. And the reason we sell them at cost and not try to make money is we're able to sell them quicker. And our model is to sell them all. So there's no tenants, no toilets. All we're doing is collecting rent on the land that we're basically leasing to them to have their house sit on one of the units. The park is currently they're charging $390 for rent on like to park their car, not their car, their house there. And the market is 550. So think of 102 units at $550 a month. It's currently cash flowing $185,000 a year, and it's only 60% occupied. Now, we're going to expand it and raise the rents, and it will cash flow around $320,000 a year. No tenants, no toilets, low maintenance, and kind of just a cash cow machine. And there's a high demand for affordable housing. So, yeah, it's definitely a need.
I love it. What kinds of risks come along with mobile home parks, and how do you mitigate those risks associated with investing in them?
That's a really good question. And it kind of comes down to any other property in real estate and knowing how to underwrite the deal. So these 80-year-old men, a lot of mobile home parks were built in the 50s and their families held on to them. So the first two parks I bought, guy was 85. Park I just bought off market, 84. And what happens when you say, hey, let me see your books? They hand you like a notepad and you're like, these are your numbers? We could make these up. And so you have to know how to go into the park and underwrite it basically yourself. And so things like measuring every unit to know, can I fit a double wide? Can I fit a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom? Because that will determine how much rent you can get or things like that. You want to take into consideration what's surrounding the park. And so things that we look for are the type of jobs. How far away is a hospital? Education, schools, big box stores. Like how far away is Walmart? It's a big deal. They do their own research on the growing development. Home Depot, things like that. And because we're selling so many homes, we do something called test ads. And what we do is we put out ads promoting the park and the houses that we'll be able to have for sale, and to see how many people are calling and how many people would qualify. So testing the water. So when we give projections, we're able to base them off of, well, we did 4 or 5 weeks of test ads, people calling, and we qualify them for their houses. We also have a partner with who will be their lender. And so we have a system. Someone qualifies, we're able to put them through to someone who will lend to them. So they're kind of hard to underwrite if you aren't really strategic on knowing, like creating a serious game plan for what you're trying to accomplish with it.
Gotcha. And in your opinion, you know, what sets mobile home parks apart from other real estate assets like apartment complexes, other multifamily options?
I might be a little biased, Justin. So apartment complex is a really good analogy that I like to bring in. So high demand. Affordable housing is in high demand. Let's take a single family home and an average cost is like around $400,000, where a modular home, if I'm going to sell it to you at price or at cost, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, $40,000. If you're going to look at an apartment, someone that's living in an apartment, average cost for a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom is $2,000. And to rent at market value on the park that I'm closing on next week is $500 rent. Average person stays in an apartment for 2 years. And an average person that moves into a modular home or a mobile home, 14. So there is low turnover, high demand, and low overhead. When you think of an apartment, you have to have on-site managers that are always trying to fill those units. Something breaks, someone needs to clean the apartment. You're constantly working on that property. Where mobile home, you don't have a lot of overhead. We usually have someone that lives on site as the manager that oversees the park, and we give them free rent. And what they're looking at is, okay, there's a pothole or a mailbox got hit, a light post needs fixing, something like that. But it's just like a neighborhood. There's not a lot you have to take care of. So low overhead, high demand, and low turnover.
That's great. What is the appreciation, you know, side of things look like? You know, I know that land is kind of its own thing, but land with mobile homes on it.
Yes. Single family homes depreciate over 27 years. And a mobile home park, it's 15. And we're going to take the example of the park that I am closing on. And it has, because there's those 40 units that don't have houses, we're purchasing a lot of real estate that first year. So the first year, we're going to be able to depreciate a lot. And our LPs that are partners with us, they also get tax advantages being a partner by just being an investor. Where I have this issue being a private money lender where I would lend money, but then I might get a high return. I also have to pay taxes on that. Where being a partner in a deal where you also are able to save money because of taxes is very beneficial for my investors.
Yeah. In mobile home parks, is there sort of a similar, I know with when you buy a property, we can do bonus depreciation, at least for now. It's gradually disappearing, but is there something similar to that with a mobile home park as well?
Yeah, it's along the same lines as other things. It's just a lot more in the first year. So
sure.
Like right now, I'm no CPA, but our projections for someone that's investing, let's take $100,000, they're able to write off around $40,000 in the first year. And that's as an LP. And then from year 2 through 5, because we sell our parks at year 5, it's around $19,000 to $20,000. And of course, you need to talk to your CPA, and it comes down to how you're investing. Is it a 401k? That makes a difference. It's self-directed. And so there's a lot of different things that factor into it. But as an LP and a hands-off investor, you do get to take advantage of some of the tax depreciation.
Let's talk a little bit about maybe the financial considerations, like cash flow, appreciation, potential. Well, we already talked about appreciation. The land itself does not depreciate, right?
So it depends also on like your strategies in regards to this park. What we're doing is we're bringing in more homes, and that's part of our strategy, and updating the amenities actually increases the land value, which also increases the equity in the park. And so current deal, I'm utilizing $425,000 on just updating amenities. So park, dog parks, mailboxes, solar panel light posts, fixing up the potholes, and updating the amenities does 3 different things. First, it increases the land value. Second, as we're raising rents on those 60 units, it's easier because they're seeing, oh, they're bringing more value. They got to increase rent. And also, when we go to sell those 40 homes, we want the people that are driving in there to be like, wow, this is a very well-kept park and community. And it just helps sell the park faster. So there's different ways that you can leverage using the land itself.
What's a typical hold time look like for something like this, an investment like this? What do you guys typically hold them for?
Good question. We're purchasing the park and we start bringing in the homes, start selling them, and start raising rents. At year 3, we refinance and we put a lot of our investors' money back into their pocket. You only want to raise the rent so much every year. And so we're going to raise the rents until year 5, and then we sell. So I like to kind of think of us, like I mentioned before, as the fix and flip model. Some people like to buy and hold for a long time. That's their strategy. That's great. Ours is to, we're purchasing it for $2 million and we're going to sell it at $7 million in 5 years. So we just find, we work with brokers, and the brokers are the ones that actually sell the park. You won't be able to see it. It won't ever go on the market. Our brokers know the guys with deep pockets that just want the pretty high cash flowing parks ready to go. So
there you go. So in the example that you just mentioned there, where you're buying it for $2 million and then you're selling it for $7 million, what is a typical investment in fixing and flipping that look like for the rehab portion of it?
Okay, perfect. This park, I'm purchasing for $2 million and I just got done raising $2 million. We got it creatively, so we got it on seller finance. The money that I'm raising for the $2 million that I just finished up, $500,000 was for a down payment. $1 million is to purchase those 40 homes. $425K is for the amenities. And I was able to break down line by line all the amenities. We were able to go in there, dissect it, figuring out how much everything will cost, like the rehab part of it. And then once we start selling those homes, then we're going to be collecting more rent on it. And so it's kind of, like I said, the fixing and flip model. If you take a, here's a good example, a house and it's, you buy it at $300,000 and the comps are $500,000. We would consider that a good deal, right? You got $200,000 in equity. Okay, now we're going to look at rent. We're purchasing this and they're charging $390. So let's just say someone's charging $300 on rent and the market is $500 in rent. That's a way, a really easy way to tell if it's a good deal. How much can I increase the rent? And so there's a comp. There are two different comps. And one of the comps I showed an investor today sold for $4 million and there's 57 units. If you break that down, they bought that park for $70,000 a unit. I purchased our park on seller finance for $2 million and there's 102 units, which means I purchased it for $19,000 per unit compared to my comp at $70,000.
There you go.
Like, sounds too good to be true. I'm like, they're out there. Sub two sounds too good to be true.
So, all right. So, you know, you started this pest control company.
Okay.
How did you move from pest control into raising capital for mobile home parks? I would love to understand that transition there.
That's a good question. Now, we got a minute. You ready for the story?
Sure.
Okay. So, 20 years old, the only W-2 job I've ever had was in high school. So, haven't had people tell me what to do. And so, graduated, I started knocking doors and selling pest control. I did really well, and people asked me, how did you make money? So, I started recruiting teams and other people to go sell pest control. And I was getting overrides on all those sales reps. And then my former husband and I started our own pest control company. And then we had business partners. Our business partners were finding managers, we're finding sales reps, and we're making overrides on all of these employees and business partners. So fast forward, I got bought out of that pest control company and I had a large sum of money. And I was like, okay, how do rich people get richer? They all have real estate. So then it was kind of like throwing spaghetti on the wall, trying to figure out who's in real estate, researching online, yeah, if I told you all the ways I was trying to get in real estate, I was sneaking into the college entrepreneur class. I was joining different communities. Fast forward, I find Pace. And first Zoom that I got on, it was like Q&A with Pace. And I put something in the side chat. He's like, everybody put your avatar. And I was like, all I put was I have and then like a money sign. And this is my first Zoom. And he's like, look right there, Jill Jensen's got money. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he just said my name. Like, and so then he's like, wait, who's Jill Jensen? Let's bring her up here. And I was like, oh no, what are we doing? Anyways, he's like, why aren't we doing deals? Reason I say this is because a week later, I got on a one-on-one Zoom with him and he taught me about how to be a private money lender. And so surprisingly, I've only ever called one seller ever. And it was my first nightly dial. And I was like, there's got to be better ways than to make money than calling sellers. So for the last 14 months, almost every single day, I talk to new people in sub two or within real estate. And I just say, what do you have and what do you need? And I've created an entire business around it. And so with lending, I didn't want to learn how to underwrite. I didn't want to learn all the numbers or how to vet a deal. I just wanted my money making me money. So instead of learning from someone who really needs my money, I was searching for people who were doing it with their own money. And I was like, I want to partner with people who are leveraging their money, not need my money, but doing it. And I want to partner with them and be like, look, if I can get my money in with your deal, you can have some of my interest, basically. I'd rather have someone that knows what they're doing help me. So one of the biggest things Pace taught was loan to own. Don't lend on a deal you're not willing to own if it completely goes south. Just look at it at worst case scenario. Are you willing to accept the worst outcome? And the person that I work with negotiates and he's able to get me more collateral than my loan is worth. So if they lose, I actually just win bigger because my loan or my collateral is worth more than my loan. Fast forward from there, I was like, I gotta hold some assets. I need some actual real estate. And so the first things that I purchased were mobile home parks. And I am a private money partner. I lent my money and this is crazy. The guy hadn't raised rents in 50 years. He was charging $60. Like it's like the comps, the lowest comp was 300. And he's just like, you could probably, I think it's time to raise the rents. Never done it before. So we go in and pay this thing with cash. And the first month we raised the rents to 150. And in the same notice, we said, hey, in 6 months, we're raising it to 250. Guess what? We're still $50 under the lowest comp, but significantly raised rents. We're in the process to refinance. So I'll get all of my money plus my interest. And the best part is I'm an equity partner. And this thing cash flows 10 grand a month. So I get a $1,000 check on top of my money already being back and my interest. So I calculate it. I'm like, okay, $1,000 for 10 years, it's 120K. Okay, we sell it in 10 years for, let's just say $2 million. That's 200K. So I'm like, okay, 335K for letting $106,000 sit in someone's account for 12 months. And that's kind of when it clicked on seeing how passive income works. And it's letting your money sit somewhere and and having income for a long period of time. Yeah, $1,000 is a month is not crazy, but the compound effect of a 10-year span really, really makes an effect on it. And then I was like, okay, my money's making me money. Now what am I going to do during the day? I'm a single mom that doesn't have a 9-to-5. I got to do something. And so I was like, I'm going to go solve the exact problem I have or I had for other people. There's so many people that have retirement accounts. They have money sitting in a cash value whole life policy, in a CD, in a stock, in their house, inheritance. And they're like, I know my money can make me money. I just don't know how. And so now I'm in a position where I can be like, look, here's the steps I took going through the same situation and how I'm doubling your money by investing it into something that you can be completely hands off, considering being a pretty secure way to invest.
That's a great story. I love it. So there you go, folks. You can go from pest control to raising capital.
Go knock some doors.
What's that?
I said, just go knock some doors.
There you go. Can you share some of the key strategies or approach that has consistently helped you successfully raise capital for your investors?
Yeah, that's great. So I was helping someone today and she's like, I'm raising capital, but I haven't done a lot of deals. Like, people want, are they credible? Like, how can I trust this person? She's like, how do I get in this if I haven't been in it before? Like, and I said, leveraging other people's credibility. Don't try to go out and do it yourself. Try to find a mentor you can partner with or go work for, go serve them and bring value to their business and kind of hold on to their coattail. So raising capital for someone else's deal and being a part of it or a partner, because the partner has the credibility. And so as a capital raiser, that's really helpful of who, not how. And other things that I've done on raising capital is leveraging social media and posting things, being very active in different real estate groups. And so for us, we're in the same community called Sub2. So leveraging the people in there that are already trying to do exactly what we're doing. You can also use, I have someone that helps me with my LinkedIn account, and I have leads that are coming, outbound leads coming into me. And podcasts just like this, talking to other, getting in front of your entire audience, because you never know who's out there looking for what I have to offer. So just being creative on surrounding yourself around other people that are trying to do the same things.
I can tell you right now that now you're talking about raising capital, and the context from which you're coming from is raising it for larger projects. But what you just said, I just want to say this to the audience, what you just said does still also apply to even the single family home project that you're working on. If you have zero credibility, it's going to be really hard for you to go and raise any capital. I get inundated with deals from people who have zero credibility. When you just ask the question, how many of these have you done? Well, this is the first one. There's no money for somebody who has no resume that gives them the credibility to do this deal, and ask for somebody to go and throw $100,000 at them. So absolutely, I tell people that what you just said, actually quite often, if you don't have credibility, then you need to go find somebody to serve in the community. Go find somebody who's killing it.
Yeah.
And say, I'm ready to go and dive in and serve you and learn along the way. Maybe I source a deal for you. What are you looking for? How can I help you find that next deal? I'll put my boots to the ground and find that next deal for you.
Exactly. And I have become successful in anything I've done because of this one thing. It's really simple. And it's finding the person who's best at what you're trying to do and ask them exactly what they do. So how did I become the best top girl sales rep in the country at the time? Because I just found the best sales rep. And I said, I filmed him. This was before your phone had a camera. So I had my little camera. I was like filming him. I'm like, what do you say? What do you wear? How do you stand? The tone of your voice. I moved to the state he was at. How do you pick a neighborhood? How do you knock a door? How do you know how many hours, how many months, like down to a T. So when I got into being a private money lender, that's when I was like, okay, who are the people doing this with their own money and that have been doing this a long time? Okay, what's your systems? What's your process? What's your paperwork? Okay, if I just have you use my money and I just get a little bit just so that I can learn, feel more confident. Gentleman that I first purchased my mobile home parks with, it's the only thing he does. Mobile home parks, West Virginia, boots on the ground. He's been doing it a long time. So I feel confident in he's had a lot of success in that one area. And then once again, I was like, okay, I want to raise capital. Who's really successful at this that has the systems in place that I'm looking for? And once I found Sonos Capital, it was like, okay, I'm the dumbest in the room. I'm in the right room.
Okay. Right. There you go. Obviously, along this journey, though, you've had to go and spend some time determining the credibility of the folks that you're potentially going to raise capital with. And I have to believe, I know from my own experience, but I have to believe that from your point of view as well, the credibility of this person is absolutely essential in your package. So how do you ensure the credibility and investment worthiness of the projects that you're raising capital for, and particularly in the eyes of potential lenders? And then how important is it, I want to word this right, how important is it to pitch versus just simply allowing the quality of the project to speak for itself?
Okay, that's a good question. And so pitching to someone is, I know I'm successful at raising capital because I don't share my agenda. I'm overcoming the investor's story that they're telling themselves. Put yourself in their mind. Have they invested before? Okay, gentlemen, today, when I'm going through my investor deck, he's done a lot of real estate. So when I'm talking about some of these numbers, guess what? He wants to know how secure the deal is. He wants to know how much money I put in. What are my returns? What are the cap rates? What are the length of time and your exit strategy? Like, what are the numbers? Well, I had a woman last week who is new to investing. And so her concerns are very different than someone who's already in real estate. So you have to be able to adjust your pitch to whatever story they're telling themselves. If you can overcome, if you have a good deal, like my mobile home park, it's just a good deal. It really is. And I don't pitch anything. If I can communicate and overcome their stories, they will most likely invest. They have no reason not to because I've overcome their concerns.
Mm-hmm. How about? Sorry to back up. I know it was like a two-part question, but how do you ensure the credibility and that investment worthiness of the projects you're about to sign on to and raise capital for? I know you've kind of ended up latching on to really a small group of people, and maybe that's
yes, part
of it. You had to go through some sort of credibility examination before you jumped on board. What was that?
So we're going to take Walter, for example. He is the founder of Sonos Capital. So I got to know him on a personal level to see who he really is, what he's all about. We were kind of vetting each other. He was like, do I trust you with my business and my baby, basically? And I'm like, do I trust you with my investors and the capital that I can bring? And his success of being in real estate since 2002, and he started in single family, built a big portfolio, realized, okay, it's in multifamily. I don't want to do tenants and toilets. And so he got into banking and he got in the right rooms with the right people and structuring the fund according to the SEC. He's really strategic with mobile home parks. And so he is on the board of manufactured housing. He's on the board in Mesa for affordable housing. So he has the connections with the homes themselves, knowing where affordable housing is needed in the state that we're buying parks. And he had me do this boot camp. And now I can tell you the size. I could tell you what year a house was built by looking at the peak of a modular home, like getting nitty gritty on his systems that are in place legally and his credibility of his past. And so taking in factors of why do people do what they do? Okay, he's great. Now let's go look at mobile homes. Well, I already had this proof of concept of I have a park that's cash flowing $10,000 a month and I'm a 10% equity partner and I feel like I'm doing great. Well, over here at Sonos Capital, we do 50-50. And I was like, oh, snap. I'm 10% over here. I'm going to go over here. So you better believe my money's going to be going into my own fund, getting 50% returns. And buying parks off market, there's a large gap. So the numbers are speaking for itself if you want to go off taxes and bank statements. So this current park it's been cash flowing before I was born. So it's only uphill from here. It's bringing in $185,000 a year, and it's only going to go uphill. And so writing on the wall behind the person, how their systems are set up, and do the numbers fit for potential investors?
Love it. So what you're saying is the person who presents a pitch deck with a nice picture of themselves but gives no background on their credibility and doesn't give any proof of concept of what they've already done, doesn't show any of their, you know, their financials for how this is operating. Are you saying that there's a low chance of them actually receiving funding?
I just say good luck.
Yeah.
Let me know how it goes.
All right. You know who you are. You've sent me deals within the last few weeks.
I think we've all had them.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, guys, let's get better. I just had one that came to me and it was literally, it had no picture of the borrower. It just said, I don't know what the guy's name was, but it said something like Eric.
Okay.
Is the borrower. Like,
who's Eric?
Nice to meet you, Eric. Eric, you know, Eric.
You know.
Okay.
Everybody knows Eric.
We all know Eric is great at investing. Anyway.
But it's really how it goes. I think people just get FOMO and they're like, I don't want to miss out on doing deals. And I'm like, Pace taught me, Jill, I'd rather you pass on 100 deals before you do one that you feel confident in. Don't just jump into a deal. A surgeon doesn't just go into surgery. Guess what? He's got to observe other surgeons for years. So just go be observant for a long time before you get in a pile of a mess.
On the medical example train, I was a nurse manager, right?
Okay. Okay.
You'd think me to be an idiot if I never did a background check on a nurse and never checked to make sure they actually have a license, right? Wouldn't I be nuts to go and hire them?
Yeah.
So why on God's green earth are we even thinking about giving money to somebody named Eric who doesn't want to give his last name and hasn't been willing to even share the resume?
Yeah. Okay?
And you know, be transparent about who are you, Eric?
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's not inviting. Yeah. I don't trust my money to random people who have zero credibility presented to me.
And as a private money lender, people are like, I'm trying to build relationships with people so that I have them. And I'm like, okay, but you still need to go out and yeah, we can become friends, but you still have to have the proof of concept. So you have to work with other people unless you're using your own money. And I don't want to say failing forward, but like figuring it out, unless you find a person that's not thinking things through too and says, here's some money, and you're both the blind leading the blind.
Yep, absolutely. We do see a lot of that, I think. You mentioned social media, and I know you've mentioned to me the importance of LinkedIn, and I feel like LinkedIn maybe is one of these easily overlooked components to raising capital. How important would you say it is to have a strong LinkedIn profile and network for entrepreneurs seeking to raise private capital? And, you know, which aspects or features of LinkedIn do you find most useful in this space?
It's pretty simple. When you think of other platforms of social media and their purpose behind it. So Instagram, there's a lot of everything. You got influencers, you've got motivational speakers, you've got friends and family, and then you have Facebook where you're in a lot of groups and you're connecting and things like that. Well, LinkedIn, you're not on there to show golf videos. A lot of it is networking and who are the type of people you're surrounding yourself with. So leveraging LinkedIn is a way that I have found accredited investors and targeting, knowing like, okay, what type of positions I can go type that in and look for certain types of a potential investor, where social media, it's like other aspects, it's just like your friends and family and things like that. So posting about what you're doing, opportunities you have, and then having a system in place on, okay, now you have someone that's interested. What do they do? You have to have a call of action for them. Yeah, they might follow you, they might like your content, but if you never put out there, invest with me or I can help you, they might follow you, but it doesn't do a lot of good to post things if you don't have people give them direction on how to work with you.
Do you have any specific examples of how leveraging LinkedIn has brought in capital for you, for your projects and investments?
I pay someone. I post things, but I also have someone else that's really strategic on knowing how to do it. And so they're able to come in and help post on overcoming the story the investors are having, being like, here's a little bit of my story and this is how I solved it, and here's how I can help you. Go to this link. What the link does is it takes them to my website and it's like, fill out this little form. How much do you have to invest? How soon? Are you accredited? Name, password. It sends me a link. It sends me an email and says, oh, Linda just created an account. Reach out to her. Here's her email, her phone number. She has $100,000. She's ready to invest now. And yes, she's accredited. So I have that information before I get on a call with her, jump on a call, or say, here's my calendar, my Calendly. My Calendly is very strategic on the questions it asks once again before they get on a call with me. So asking a little bit more in depth, their investment goals. Once again, how much do you have? Set up a call with me. So I have a system in place of, once I find the person or someone, let's say someone is interested, how do you get them to become an investor? You have to have the steps for them to locate you or find you, or just simply offering it to them.
Yeah. Obviously, you said you pay somebody to go and do your LinkedIn, so you don't really you don't really decide all of your content. But what are some examples of the type of content? Do they post videos of you talking, or do they post a lot of
things on mobile home parks? It's a picture of a park and one of our deals, or reasons why we pick them, the advantages of mobile home parks, things that are needed, affordable housing. Why mobile home park investing is valuable is really what they're talking.
Gotcha. Very, 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 very focused on really driving the investments mobile that you're working on.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Lots of pictures of mobile homes.
Okay.
You can go check it out. Go check me out.
I'm gonna definitely check it out. In fact,
Jill Jensen on LinkedIn.
There we go. We'll link it in the description down below.
Perfect.
What advice do you have for new entrepreneurs or real estate investors who are nervous about pitching their ideas to potential investors? And what are some of the most common mistakes that you see entrepreneurs make in these pitches that they should avoid? Obviously, we've already talked about credibility, but beyond that.
I kind of mentioned getting out of your head on your agenda and focusing more on how can I serve this person, not make money off of them. As soon as you can forget about yourself and really put yourself out there on helping solve someone's problem. And so we do work with people like in our community who are helping someone who's pre-foreclosure. They're in a hard time where instead of pitching them on trying to get this deal, it's really coming down to like, how can I help this person? More than just thinking about yourself, but really helping the other person as well. And what else do mistakes people make? Educating yourself on knowing how to communicate. So there's a book called Pitch Anything, and it talks about holding the frame and knowing how to stay in control. So an example, when someone gets on the phone with me, we'll just take a potential investor. I want to make sure that I'm staying in control of the conversation. And so getting to know them and then being like, this is how I like my calls to go. And then I say, I want you to first tell me about yourself and your goals and where you're at in real estate. I'll tell you mine, and then we'll see if we can collaborate. And what I just did there was, hey, I'm in control, and this is how the call's going to go. I also have 30 minutes, so I have a cutoff time. Also telling you that my time is valuable. And so I learned this over time and by reading books and knowing how to communicate or mirror people, getting people to like you. All of those things go into play because people buy or invest from people that they like and trust, not just good numbers.
Mm-hmm. Love that. That is excellent.
Thanks.
I feel like a lot of people start from numbers. I just had a text not too long ago from somebody looking to get some deals funded, and it's all just numbers. And I don't know who this person is yet, but you know, we'll have to go and ask that. But to me, it's far more important to really understand who that person is.
Yeah.
And first, like I really just want to know who you are. It's odd to get a text
with looking
for funding on numbers.
Invest in the person, not the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between an active and a passive investor and where do they fit into your world?
Okay, great question, Justin. So active is, we're investors. We both know how it goes. So do you want to be looking at deals every 6 to 9 months? Or do you want your money just making you money? So active is, there's turnaround and you got to keep looking for new opportunities. You got to keep vetting deals. You might get a higher return. You're also getting taxes and time, and does that really fit what you're trying to accomplish? Where passive, it's literally putting your money in a vehicle that's generating income over a long period of time. And so putting it in a fund, I originally thought, I want to see my money back at least in 12 months. Like, I was afraid to have my money out for too long. I don't want it out there. I just want it back. But then I want to hurry and turn around and put it somewhere. I want to hurry around to put it somewhere else to keep making money until I realized, okay, by placing it here, I'm going to more than double my money over a longer period of time. And so is it really, as an investor, do you want it to generate for a long period of time? Or do you want to be active all the time looking for, and some people like to do that.
What specific advantages does investing with Sonos Capital offer compared to other investment opportunities in the market? I'm assuming one of the chief ones is passivity in investment. What else kind of stands out in?
Yeah. The type of investment in and of itself. So we're not stocks. We're not fix and flip on a house that we haven't done this before. There are large margins for the limited partners. So an investor coming on board, high tax advantages for themselves. So not just making money, but saving money. And we offer really good returns by doing 50-50%. So 50% cash flow, 50% when we sell it, low overhead, but it's a high demand market. And so it's like, nothing's guaranteed in real estate. We all know that. But if this thing has been cash flowing since before I was born, I have a pretty good feeling it's only going to keep going up from here. And so the type of deal in and of itself is really it's an advantage point for a new investor or someone trying to get their feet wet.
And you mentioned that you're primarily, these investors are going to be accredited investors. Are there ever any opportunities for non-accredited?
There will be, but not at this moment. We will be creating another fund. This current fund is for accredited investors only. So that consists of having minimum of $100,000 to invest, and being an accredited investor is you have $1 million worth in assets, or you make $200,000 a year. And the third one is if your household makes $300,000. So if you make 150 and your spouse makes 150, you'd be considered.
You could apply. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Cool. So it's not some sort of magical, certification you get. It's just simply referring to the amount of money that you make or your net worth.
Yes. It just comes down to the facts.
Love it. Can you share a success story or case study that illustrates the unique benefits and returns that investors have experienced by partnering with Sonos in particular? You mentioned your investment in your first deal, but now Sonos is giving slightly different returns. Maybe you can give a sample of what people are making now in Sonos.
Yes. So my current investors right now on the park I'm closing on next week, if you were to invest $100,000, you will profit $240,000. So the $239,000, if I want to be exact on the projections. So the money multiplier is 2.39. So more than double your investment. And how we got those projections, like I mentioned before, is the comp, they purchased each unit for $70,000, where we purchased ours at $19,000. So there truly is this large gap. And it's like, yeah, but how did you get that? Well, it was an 84-year-old man. It was off market. He doesn't know the value of the comps. We just said, look, you're 85, here's $500,000 and a monthly check for the rest of your life. And so there's a large opportunity by giving those types of returns. So being in the fund, it's a 10% preferred return, projected 24% IRR with 50% cash flow to our investors and 50% when we sell the park, along with top it off with tax depreciation.
And for those who are listening who are not as savvy with real estate, can you explain the difference between the preferred rate of return and an IRR?
Now we're getting too deep. It's just the amount you're going to make over the period of time and the percentage of having your funds and your money in the fund itself. So, and one thing people today, I had the objective of someone being like, okay, what's the difference between a fund and a syndication? And a syndication is when someone has a deal being like, hey, do you want to partner with me on this duplex? And they create a JV agreement. They're both putting their money in it. It's a deal right in front of you, ready to go. You're literally on the deal itself. Like the address is on the paperwork. Where having your money in the fund, we have one document that anyone that joins Sonos Capital signs. And so people are like, why isn't Globe with the address on the paperwork? Well, you're placing your money in the fund, and then you're picking this park to invest in. So that's what is reflected on what you're going to make. And so we don't have paperwork for every single deal inside the fund, which also means someone can put their money in the fund and have that 10% preferred rate. And then they have first dibs on the next deal that's presented. They're like, okay, the money's here, ready to go for when a deal presents itself. We have the funds. We don't have to go out and raise the capital. The thing is, I like to have a deal in front of me. So then when I'm pitching an investor, they can see real numbers. So even though I have a fund, it's kind of like I have a syndication approach. By when I pitch them, I am actually showing them a current deal and number wise. So
that's good. Well, do you have any closing thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience? Anything?
It's a great question. Anyone that's really interested in investing in real estate, just in general, I love educating people, teaching them how to raise capital. And with Sonos Capital, what I'm doing is I'm going to create the same business model that I did with pest control, now just in real estate with capital raisers, where we had business partners, managers, people who were putting on accounts and selling. And so I got really good at knocking doors and putting on accounts, but then I also got really good at hiring and training people. And so, yes, my first raise in a month with this group, I raised $1 million. And I was like, that was pretty good. Let's see if I can double that. So this next one, I'm like, in 6 weeks, I want to raise $2 million. That's my goal. And then on top of that, I want to be able to hire other capital raisers and teach them how to raise capital. I'd rather have a small piece of a big pie. And so what I'm really passionate about is teaching other people how to leverage their own money and how to raise money. So if there's any accredited investors that want to know how I'm doing business, or there are people that have a good network that are like, I have access to people that have money, but I need the people that are credible. Those are the people I'm hiring to work with us at Sonos Capital.
Awesome. Well, Jill, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your insights on capital raising. I already have people that are looking forward to watching this just because they want to learn about capital raising, which is awesome. So thank you so much for joining.
Yes, I do have a question.
Okay.
We kind of talked about it at the beginning. Knowing you said this was the 17th episode or so. And have you heard the statistics on podcasts? I'm going to tell you. Are you ready?
Tell me the statistic. Yeah.
No. So 3.9 million people start a podcast a year. 20% of them make it past episode 3. And only 1% of them make it past episode 20. So,
Justin, I'm going to be in the 1%. I'm just telling you right
now. You only got to get two more, and then now your audience knows Justin's legit. Got to keep listening to this guy because he's in the 1% club.
Absolutely. Well, we're definitely going to be hitting 20 episodes, and we got some cool guests lined up. I'm just saying, yeah. But I'm not going to tell you who it is.
Okay, cool. I'm excited.
Love it. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'd love to hear your feedback in the comments below. Also, let us know who you'd like to see as a guest on future episodes of Nursing Real Wealth. Join us every other Tuesday for more insightful discussions. Have a great day.